Blog Talk Radio.
Our theme is a little low today. We tried a little lower level because it was kind of high at the cutoff point. So I guess people can hardly hear it. So we'll go ahead and start the program. Today is February 4th, and for the Polish, it's Tadeusz Kościuszko, who's a Polish patriot, who I believe was involved in helping us gain our freedom in the American Revolution. We're hearing a lot about the Tea Party and the problems it's causing, or the concerns, put it mildly, to both the Democrats, or the Demorats, as some people say, and the Republicans, or the dyed-in-the-wool Republicans. But today, in 1787, we had an event that occurred in Pennsylvania called Chay's Rebellion, and it was probably the first. It wasn't tea, it was whiskey, and was a tax placed on whiskey, and George Washington had to send the army in to put down the uprising. But that was probably the first, that was the father or the grandfather of tax protests. We've had other protests in other parts of the country on poll tax. Farmers had their products unfair and excessive taxes were placed on them, things like that, all kinds of economic harassment. Also today, in 1854, a guy named Alvard Bove created the name Republican Party, and it stuck, and they had their first convention in Ripon, Wisconsin, which is, and you probably heard of the Ripon Group, which was connected to, excuse me, people like Anderson, you know, who worked in the first Reagan administration, and these were these so-called liberal Republicans who were trying to modify or moderate some of the more extreme views, as they saw it, of the Republican Party. Excuse me. I'm still getting over that cold, and those of you who didn't hear last week's show, it's because I was in the hospital. So I'm trying to recover. Apparently something's going around, and I may have caught it. We don't know what it is, and I hope to find out what it is because it's slowing me down. Also today, it's an interesting day in history. Well, let's go with the birthdays. It's birthday of Emperor Norton. He was a San Francisco character who declared himself. He had two dogs named Bummer and Lazarus, and he went around shaking down restaurants. He was a unique, one of these things that makes San Francisco unique. One of the better things. We have other things that we prefer not to talk about and wish we could forget. But Emperor Norton set himself up as the Emperor of San Francisco, and he went around with his two dogs shaking down restaurants in homage, and he was a genuine San Francisco character. It's also the birthday of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was one of the Protestant clergy theologians who opposed Hitler, and I believe he was sent to a concentration camp. He wasn't the only one. It's also the birthday of one of the great Austrian music conductors, worked at the Metropolitan Opera, Salzburg, Erich Langsdorff. And he made a famous comment when he was interviewed, I think it was on WFMT in Chicago, when they asked him, "Do you listen to the recordings of other conductors?" And he said, "It depends, if they know more than I do." And I think that applies across the board. I've been asked that question, and I sometimes reply with that answer because there are people who do know more than I do. And that's the important thing. Whoever you deal with, know your limitations and always try to go beyond your limitations by learning more. Beware these people who think they know everything and try to bamboozle you with, "I've got a bar card, I've got a degree, I'm a cop, I'm a priest, I'm a bishop," that kind of BS. We don't need that. And when they're trying to do that, they're really masking their own inadequacy and intellectual dishonesty. So keep that in mind. I think it's a beautiful phrase. If somebody knows more than I do, I pay attention to them. So also the the death of Liberace, those of you who know the flamboyant. He was also a Polish ethnicity and from Milwaukee. Quite a piano player, but he was a bit too flaming of a gay boy. And, you know, he didn't hide it. So, but he studied classical piano, so give him credit for that. Also, one of the great villains, he didn't get the credit he deserved, John Denher, D-E-H-N-E-R, is probably his most famous movie, and there's something to it about Dr. Mengele. It's called The Boys from Brazil. He played a Nazi in it. Excuse me. And then getting back into history, we have in 1822, Liberia was settled by the first free American blacks. There's one of the misconceptions in history that Lincoln started Liberia. He didn't. It was a state, kind of a free state in Africa, and it got credibility when Lincoln made that offer after the Emancipation Proclamation, which is another misunderstood historical document. If you read it very carefully, and Lincoln was very Spartan in his language, he said that he gave a time date for the Confederacy, the South, to come back into the Union. And if they did, then they would work things out. But if they didn't, the slaves would be free. Now, it would be interesting if Jefferson Davis and the Southern Confederate Congress had agreed to Lincoln's proposed terms, what would have happened to slavery? And remember that Lincoln was pro-slave. He didn't want to deal with the, quote, Negro problem. So, you know, go back and look at it. It's a document that you should read, because when he gave that Gettysburg Address, I think it was about 10 minutes, the other orator that day, Edward Everett, gave a speech that was about an hour and a half, and nobody remembers what it was, what it said, or what was in it. So it gets to show you that sometimes the least amount goes the furthest. Excuse me. And let's see, today, those of us who are concerned about the rise of Nazism or neo-Nazism and freedom of the press, the real press, President von Hindenburg, he was a great general, great Prussian general, who was commander of the German army in World War I, and after the war, he served in the Franco-Prussian War, and Prussian aristocrat, and the conservatives decided to block Hitler by getting Hindenburg, getting him to run for the German presidency, which he did, but he was so aged, and he didn't last long. But anyway, on this date in history in Germany, he limited the freedom of the press, and then Hitler finished off the press that he didn't like, sent him to the concentration camp. So these were journalists, editors, people involved in the media were among the first people sent to Dachau and the other German concentration camps. That's something these media people here in the United States should be aware of, that God forbid if this country ever turns extremely right and becomes a right-wing dictatorship or whatever, the media people who helped bring it about because of their lack of reporting or their lies, distortions, and omissions are ones who are the greatest danger to a dictatorship. They will be the first ones, among the first, to go into the camps or the ovens or the boxcars or what have you, or maybe before a firing squad. Also today, in 1938, Hitler seized control of the German army. He did something very interesting. They did have homosexuality in Germany during the Weimar Republic was pretty rampant, and Berlin was, of course, one of the flaming cities. And if you see the movie Cabaret, it gives you an idea what went on in Germany in that period. But there was this Hitler pulled a stunt where, I forgot his name, one of the great German generals, the German general staff was among the most respected and most powerful of any military general staff in the world. And to get rid of an obstacle who opposed him in the German army, he accused this general of homosexuality. And what it was the guy had married a woman younger than himself, and there had been an affair, but he forced his retirement. And then Hitler brought in his people and took over the German army, in effect, and all the soldiers had to swear an allegiance. The entire German military, including the general staff, had to swear an allegiance to Hitler instead of to the German country. So that was the beginning of fascism in the military. And then, of course, we've seen the horrors that came from that, and how the Wehrmacht, the and the special what do they call them, special units, Erzengottes, I think it's pronounced, excuse my German. But we need to look back at that to learn from that history. History repeats itself, and the second time around, it's often worse. The other thing we should be aware of, that homosexuality in Germany, if you were a masculine homosexual or a pedophile like Göring was, and there were homosexuals who were prominent in the German Nazi hierarchy, but they were masculine. This is a very odd thing. It was okay to be masculine, but if you were a flamer, you ended up in the camps or in the cells of the Gestapo, or if you had political connections. So this is something that we need to be aware of because of this furor over the Clinton doctrine, don't ask, don't tell, or don't ask because they don't want to tell and won't. But anyway, we'll get into this don't ask, don't tell, because there's a lot more to it, and it's going to backfire on the people who are promoting the abolition of that and not looking at very carefully to modify what needs to be modified. And today, in 1991, those of you who are worried about postage stamps, postage went up from 25 cents to 29 cents, and today those of you still have the forever stamps, and postage is still going up, and it will continue to go up. I can remember when a stamp was 5 cents, and you had two home deliveries a day and on Saturday, and over the Christmas season, stamps were 2 cents if you left the flap of the envelope unsealed. Also, there was deliveries on Saturdays. Now there's hardly any deliveries, and what the post office is trying to do is trying to get more people to go to these centralized spots like the UPS store, some of these mail drops, because that cuts down on the work. And we have some interesting video, I think I saved, on how they measure, how these managers measure how much, how efficient the mailman or mail lady is. So I'll put those up as soon as I can find them. We have over 1,000 unedited videos. And so if you want to see our latest, go to Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas, YouTube, and we have we're our affiliate, Damn Reckless Driver. We're on our crusade because of the rampant reckless driving that's injuring people and driving up the cost of insurance for everybody, even the people who are careful drivers, safe drivers who obey the laws, don't text, don't get on that damn cell phone, and don't try to run over pedestrians and think it's funny. It's become so bad here in San Francisco that they're putting at one children's playground, which I'm working on right now, they've already crashed into the barriers, and it's just a matter of time if they keep doing what they're doing and the police do not patrol it like they used to, they're going to kill a child, and then there's going to be an uproar. So we're trying to prevent that, and you can do the same in your own community. Start taking license plates. Use your camera, cell phone. Start taking the license plates. Catch these. Don't put yourself at risk. But when you have an opportunity, if you're at a stop sign and somebody, or at a stoplight and somebody's yakking on the damn phone or texting, if you have your cell phone or your mini camera, they become so small and fast and they zoom well, don't be afraid to take a picture of them and take a picture of their license plate. And if you have a website, put it up there or give it to the cops, give it to your DMV, because these people are costing us. They're costing every good driver, drivers who don't have accidents, who don't get involved in accidents, and who obey all the laws. Incidentally, something for you to think about. If you ever got a parking, a traffic ticket, do you know where that money goes? It doesn't go to the cops in some of these cities and counties. We'll get into that. I found something very interesting on that. And maybe that's one reason why the police do not enforce the traffic stops, because not only do they put their lives at risk, some cops have been shot, but they don't get the money from the traffic citation. It goes to other, it's surprising where it goes, let's put it that way. Also, these bicyclists, we have this bicycle anarchy. Of course, typically, these people that ride bikes think that this is Amsterdam. If any of you have been to Europe, that's one of the capitals of bike riding, in Copenhagen, places like that. But this is not Europe, and their place. This is a car-oriented society. It always has been, and bicyclists need to respect the rules of the road. Their attitude is the rules of the road don't apply to two-wheel bikes. Not only that, according to the statutes, bicycles should be licensed. They're supposed to, I think it's $3 or $4 for a license plate. So that's something, and with these cities yelling that they're going bankrupt or are bankrupt, it's time that they look at the sources of revenue that they should be collecting, such as licensing from bicyclists. So if that law is on your books, if you're concerned about the finances of your city or your state, ask your state representative or your representative to start looking at it if it's on there or to put it on the books and to start enforcing it and start collecting the money, because there are a growing number of bicycles, and it's fine. It's fine to ride a bike when it's in a safe environment. You're not causing problems with traffic patterns, and it's very dangerous. We're going to show you a site on a major highway where all of a sudden the bike path cuts across the highway, and some bicyclist is going to be put into orbit because of the way people drive, and it's so stupid what these traffic control people did at this particular site. I was shocked when I saw it. I drove by it the other day. But, you know, these are things you can do for yourself. And, you know, don't complain. Don't sit around and bitch and moan. Get off your duck. You know, stand up, speak out, stand firm. It's still a free country. There's still free speech. Use it or you'll lose it. Also today, in 1974, we had Patty Hearst was kidnapped, and Hearst publications, the newspapers of that family, and she later married the U.S. Marshal that was involved in the case, a deputy U.S. Marshal, not the U.S. Marshal. Also, on the terrorist watch, we have the PLO, which was founded in 1969 on this date, and I guess these people haven't cleaned up their act and probably won't, and they get no sympathy. I've seen too many of the things that these people do, and a lot of the money. We've even had, in one case that I was involved in, we discovered that the opposition lawyer, who was a crook anyway, he was involved in a case where American food stamps, the Palestinian grocers were taking the revenue from the food stamps and giving it to the PLO. And we're trying to get all the other specifics. But this has been one of the problems with some of these Palestinian grocers. And some of them are very good people. During the earthquake here in San Francisco, the local Palestinian news grocer, he gave out candles, food, and everything, and just trusted people to pay him back. And most people did. I mean, he was a fine gentleman. But there's slime out there, as there are in every ethnic group. Just as I put up on my website today, there was a mistake about a black cell phone user. And on that particular clip, there are other people of all ethnic groups. There are a couple of blacks, a couple of whites, I think one Asian. So I didn't want to be people thinking I was just targeting blacks. No, it's equal opportunity cell phone violation. Now, getting to the don't ask, don't tell. What nobody has brought up, or they're afraid to bring up, and this is very interesting, most people do not know that Harvey Milk served honorably, apparently, in the U.S. Navy. They have a picture of him, just got it, and he was discharged honorably. Now, the question is, and in his bios, he claimed that he before he went into the Navy, at age 17, he discovered that he was gay. So the question is, now, this was during the 50s when the rules, the military rules on homosexuality were automatic discharge, or general discharge from the military services. But the question is, if he was gay before he went in, and of course was gay when he was in, did he behave himself, or did he, in my phrase, keep his mouth shut, didn't propagandize, didn't try to convert, didn't preach, kept his sleeves down and his zippers and his underwear up? But apparently he was discharged honorably. So there's a question there that we have people in the service, and this is a fact, who are gay in their private life. They're not on the, most of them are not on the picket lines. They're not propagandizing for gay, lesbian marriage and adoption of gays adopting children, or allowing NAMBLA, the pedophile group, to come on to military bases, which they have in one instance. In Japan, and the general, I understand people were furious. They came on and tried to convert the kids to homosexuality, lesbianism, and transgenderism, and here in San Francisco and in California, these various homosexual, lesbian, NAMBLA advocacy groups have gotten access to not only the public schools, but the private schools, including the Catholic schools, some of them. And they openly admit and brag that they need converts, and convert was one of the dictums of one of the lesbians. And they don't go into, they have no qualifications, and there's supposed to be a law to anybody that's teaching regularly in the schools is supposed to be checked out to make sure they don't have a pedophile or criminal or terrorist background. We even had on our books here in California the statutes that if somebody didn't swear allegiance to the United States or was a communist, they were barred from teaching positions. So I don't know what's happened. That law is still on the California statute books, and we'll see if it's been quietly repealed, as some of these laws have, and people didn't know about it. But what's been going on is we have these loudmouths, and when you criticize them, you're accused of a hate crime, or what I call the Caligula law. Emperor Caligula was the one who said, it's not enough to punish, to kill people, we have to make them suffer before they die. So this is what this whole intimidation of this hate crime crap that these propagandists have inflicted upon the rest of us, eventually it's going to be challenged in the courts and they're going to overturn it. Decent judges will have to do that if they want to attain their own credibility. The other thing is this gay panic. It's going to come up in a case in Indiana where a 25-year-old former Marine, it's inexplicable. He had his child, he had a girlfriend, he was at this black gay professor's house over the holidays, and there was something happened, and his name is Michael Griffin, is the young former Marine, came back with a knife and a change of clothes, and this I can't explain. I don't know, his lawyer's going to have a hell of a time explaining this one. And he claims he got into an argument with this black professor because the professor had sexually assaulted him. And he stabbed him many times and then left, changed his clothes, and kept the knife for some reason. It was a knife that he had used in Iraq. So there's a problem right there. I can see it from a legal point of view. But this professor was an out-and-out gay, and he had a diary, which he mentioned that he had met somebody and there was something involved, and that's all the police have released at this point. So there's some problems with this case. But already the homosexuals and lesbians in the media have accused this young man of gay panic, which is another myth. It doesn't exist. It's a political creation to justify the sexual assaults and sexual conflicts between two males. I haven't seen it applied in a lesbian case where a heterosexual woman or young girl has been assaulted by a lesbian woman, and this does happen. We don't hear about it as much or at all. But there's more of this with young males, and immediately the homosexual propagandists are bandering, oh, it's gay panic. He was really gay, and then after he had the experience, he had guilt, and then he decided to eliminate the source of his guilt by killing his sexual partner, which is a lot of crap. But anyway, this is the kind of thing that the Nazis and the Soviets used to do, you know, create this mindset. And if you, those of you who have seen the Manchurian Candidate, you can get an idea of how the communists, how these totalitarian systems manipulate or try to manipulate people's minds and their thinking and their behavior. That's a fascinating film. I recommend it to anybody who's interested in seeing how mass psychology, how they try to manipulate people through mass psychology and doing it with small groups to begin with, and then it gets bigger and bigger. And, of course, you should watch the Hitler rallies. Those are masterpieces, the Nuremberg rallies and that sort of thing. But the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, throughout history, we can go back to the time of Philip of Macedonia, the father of Alexander the Great, who was, they claim was bisexual. Philip of Macedonia, or he called himself Philip the Barbarian, apparently had a sexual relationship or sexual abuse with this young servant, and the servant killed him. So I guess you could say, if we wanted to apply the hate crime to that, if that concept, that bogus concept, was around at that time, you could apply it to that. But we've had these situations throughout history, and more recently in the last 100 years, where homosexuals who are get involved in treachery, treason, and in situations. The earliest one in the last 100 years was the Austrian guy named Colonel Radel, R-E-D-L, is a famous movie and a stage play about him. He was the head of Austrian counterintelligence, and he was gay, and he liked young males, and he took care of them, and he got compromised by the Russians. The Austrians were the opponents of the Russians in Central Europe at that time. This was about 1880, around there. I forgot the date. Then we had in 1890, around there, the Esterházy Dreyfus case, where Esterházy was a Hungarian who somehow got into the French military at Saint-Cyr, which is their West Point, and he was a classmate of Alfred Dreyfus, who was Jewish, wealthy Jewish family from Alsace-Lorraine. And Dreyfus was not popular. He kept to himself, and of course there's been this anti-Semitism in the French army for a long time, and in France. It still reverberates today, even though President Sarkozy is of Hungarian Jewish ethnicity or background himself. He became family. His grandfather was a rabbi, grand rabbi, and the family became Catholic, like a lot of these Jewish families. Of course, we're all related. Those of us who are Catholic, our roots are in the Old Testament and Judaism. Even to the dress, the skull cap, and the vestments that are worn at the Roman Catholic Mass. But anyway, he was selling military secrets, of a cannon, which I have shown on a website which is connected to this case. In fact, it was a cannon used by the American Expeditionary Forces in World War I. The French are very famous for their light artillery. In fact, Napoleon, their greatest general, Wellington said of him, he never saw anybody use artillery like Napoleon did. They were well trained. And Napoleon made his reputation at Toulon, the French naval base, where they fought off, defeated the British fleet. The British had the best navy. The French had the best army until Waterloo. what happened was the French military counterintelligence discovered that there was a spy in the general staff. And so they started looking. They got this they had a spy in the German embassy in Paris, and they got this letter, which had the name letter D in it. And so the general staff investigators started looking through their roster, and the only D looked at all the D's, and then they came across Dreyfus and said, oh, he's Jewish. Let's look at him closely. So he got set up. He was sent to Devil's Island, military court-martial. They tried to get him to commit suicide because they tried to brush the thing under the rug, and he wouldn't do it. And it's a famous case. It was also a movie during the 30s with, he eventually was exonerated, and Esterházy was uncovered as a spy, and he was running a male whorehouse in Paris. In World War I, the Germans were trying to compromise American sailors at the Brooklyn Naval Base there. In World War II, they tried the same thing. And after World War II, we had the infamous British diplomats who were homosexuals, and they got into all kinds of problems, and they were stealing the atomic bomb secrets, selling them to the Russians. And there was a British naval officer named Vassal. I'll get into the more detailed history because I've made a study of this as a historian. So anyway, our guest who was supposed to be on last week, he's still sick. So we'll be back Thursday. I want to thank you for tuning in. And remember, we have archived everything. We recommend that you go to our YouTube, Amicus Veritas, video Verite site, AmiCusVeritas. And go to our websites, amicusveritas.org, and follow any of the five topics that are on there. And we'll be updating things as we come closer to November. And those of you who asked about Pelosi, it's time that she resigns. She's 70 years old. She's too old to be in a position she's in. This is Peter Paul. Thanks for viewing and listening. Okay. Okay. Oh, I see. Not good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.